These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Clyde will be telling his story. He was one of the first speakers that I could stay awake through. When I first came in the program, it was pretty foggy for me. But it was a very colorful story. I don't know what he's going to say tonight, but I bet we're going to have to strap on our seatbelts. It's not his first rodeo. Come on and welcome Clyde.
I'm Clyde. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I don't know when to stop, so y'all just have to tell me when the time's up. I didn't drink that long, but I have a lot of stories, so I'm not going to really stay in that story too long, because I usually can take about an hour and a half just to get through my 3 or 4 years of drinking. And people are usually leaving. And I hadn't got to AA yet, but I was suggested by a buddy of mine, maybe I should start in AA. So I'm going to do it a little different tonight. I actually got to AA in 1975. That's the first time I decided I would stay a while. I had gotten to AA back in 1972, but I wasn't quite ready at that point. I grew up with AA well known in my family. My dad was a drunk. He got sober in 1967 and in AA. So I started going to AA functions back in the late 60s, and I hated them. I didn't know why. I just didn't want to be there. So as I started drinking, I was pretty young. I think I was about 12 or 13. And the day I drank wasn't that eventful. I didn't think anything happened, actually. I thought it was just a normal day. I got in a ruckus with my two best friends and basically didn't like them anymore and decided I didn't want nothing to do with them. I left the gymnasium. And I went out and there was a riot. This is back in the North Florida, and there was a lot of rioting going on back in those days in Northern Florida. And there happened to be a riot going on that day outside. And the entire school campus was full of people fighting. And I got right in the middle of it. And I met some guys that day, and I drank with those guys that day. And I never have seen those two best friends of mine since that day. I never spoke to them again. I never wanted to speak to them again. I was hanging out with these guys who drank. And for years when I first got to AA, I was ashamed to even tell people my first drink because I didn't get drunk. I just had a drink. But my entire life changed instantly. I started hanging out with these guys. I quit school. All I wanted to do was drink, shoot pool, and hang out at the beach. And that's really all I really tried to do from that day on. But it took years and years of being sober to understand that that is why I'm an alcoholic. Because one drink changed my entire life, even though I didn't get drunk. It gave me something. It gave me the camaraderie with people. I felt different. I can remember with the two buddies I used to run with prior to that, I didn't even like them. I never liked them, but I had to run with somebody. And so I was running with these two guys I hated. And all of a sudden I left them and I started drinking. Well, anyway, I really don't... And for years I told my story many times. And the night that Tim's talking about hearing my story was one of those nights I never got sober. And I didn't make it to AA. The time ran out, and we just had to accept the fact that I was sober that night. But anyway, my story really was back. I told a lot of the drinking stories, and they take a long time. But the point is, as time has passed in AA, I've realized that really this isn't really about the stories. I mean, I did a lot of crazy stuff, not knowing it. Most of my stories were told to me after I got sober by people that I used to call them liars. My parents used to tell me what happened, and I didn't believe them. Even to this day, I don't really remember the stories I tell. They're just stories that were told to me that I did. And some of them were like, I got drunk, overdosed, and stole the sheriff's gun, was going to shoot him, and they ended up taking me into the insane asylum that day. They didn't even think I had alcoholism. They just thought I was insane. But then the psychiatrist or whatever she was at the insane asylum released me that day. Didn't think there was anything wrong with me because I didn't want to be there. She asked me one or two questions, and one of them that sticks out was, do you want to be here? And I said, no. And believe it or not, it's taken me years to admit this. I actually did want to be there. But I didn't have the courage to say that I didn't want to go back out and be free. I think that's what has driven me all my life, is I never could get real with nobody. And when I got sober, I had about a year, 15 months, and I was telling my fourth step to a guy that I thought I could trust. He seemed like a guy that didn't judge too harshly those around him. So I went to tell him, and I'm starting to tell him, and I couldn't tell him. I just flat out just said, I can't do this. I wadded up the paper, and I threw it away. He said, look, let me tell you my story. And so he told me his story. Now, I related to almost everything he had to say, and he got very in-depth with his story. It wasn't about his drinking, it was about his person. And so I related to it, but there was no way I was going to tell him. Although I felt a lot better listening to his story. I felt like I'm okay now, and I left feeling better, but I could not admit it. And it took decades of not drinking before I could ever get real with my story. That's why sometimes I go to a lot of these study meetings and I hear so many people talking about working the fifth step, the fourth step, and third step, or what is sixth and seventh step. I can't really talk about them a whole lot that's encouraging because I didn't have the ability to do them. I'm not sure I do now. All I can do since I've been sober is show up. And I've been doing that a long time. And something has happened in spite of my inability to do what someone would say is the next right thing. I've never been able to do the next right thing. I've just done the next thing I want to do. And that's the way it is. When I finally got honest, I'm doing exactly what I want to do tonight. I'm not doing this for you. And that's a big deal, to really know that I don't have to do this for you today. I'm here for me. I tell my story to help me keep myself real with me. If someone gets something out of that, you're just lucky or unlucky. Because it's not about me saving anybody anymore. It's really not about me. But it is about me wanting to be here today. So anyway, I was drinking from the age 12. I got sober when I was just shy of 17. I met a couple of girls at a meeting, and amazing to me, they were interested in me. One of them was about 29, the other was 19. And they dragged me around to meetings for about a year. Introduced me to people, got me phone numbers. In modern day times, you would say they sponsored me. Although they never told me to read the big book. They never walked me through any steps. All they did was take me to meetings, introduce me to people. And somewhere around 9 months, I remember, they called me, or I called them to go to a meeting. I think I called one of them. And she told me, look, we've done our part. You know where the meetings are. You've got some phone numbers. You're going to have to get yourself to a meeting. It's not our responsibility to get you there anymore. And I was pretty pissed. I thought they were indebted to me now. I mean, I thought they felt the same way about me as I felt about them. But they obviously didn't have that kind of attachment to me. So, nevertheless, I did go on to meetings. And the truth about it is, the reason I went on to meetings is I didn't have anything else going for me. There was nothing else better in life than meetings. And that doesn't sound too encouraging, but I have a feeling if you're in here tonight and you've got nothing better to do, you probably got a chance of not drinking. If you've got a lot of things to do, you might not stay. AA is not that attractive. I mean, I did not find it attractive. I didn't like anything here except those girls. You know, they were pretty good. But I didn't care for the book. I didn't read the book. I actually couldn't read when I got here. I had people basically tell me not to worry about it. Just keep coming back. But one of those girls was a school teacher, and she told me, look, if you hear a word you don't know, go look it up. Well, hell, I didn't know how. I couldn't spell it, you know. I couldn't spell the word to look it up. But the bottom line is I did start doing some of that, actually, and it did help me. Learn how to read, but I never went back to school. I tried to do that. I tried to do what everybody talks about doing at meetings. I heard, there were people going back to school. There were people getting good jobs. There were people improving on their lives. So I wanted to do the same, but it didn't work out that well for me. I went to school, but I couldn't sit in the class, so I'd get up and leave. I'd get a job, and about the middle of the day, I'd get frustrated and have to leave and go to a meeting. So I got fired a lot. The school didn't accept me because I was never in class. You know, things like that. So a couple of years were pretty rough, but I just kept going to meetings. About 3 years sober, I think I eventually got where I could keep a job. And I looked like I had a little bit more sense. When I came in, it was in the mid-70s, so I was still basically, I looked like a hippie. Long hair, thin, ragged hippie clothes, and showed up late every meeting, of course. But I didn't change that appearance very quickly. It was several years into sobriety before I got my appearance cleaned up or... So I was, what I'm saying is I'm a little bit slower than most. But I think the point I'm really trying to drive at in my case, that what really this wasn't about, I couldn't do the exterior thing to get myself looking better and doing right and becoming this better person. So I just kept coming. But I was lucky because there were people around me who really didn't care. They really just didn't care what I looked like. I went to meetings like the Night Owls over at Biscayne, and most of those people, I felt like I fit in. They didn't look that great. they were just normal people. Most of them were hippies or drunks, And they didn't lose that identity, is what I'm trying to say. They didn't lose it once they got sober. So I could hang out with people like that. I never really wanted to quit drinking. When I got here, I really didn't think I had a drinking problem. I actually thought I was insane. I couldn't stand nights. Nights were pretty bad. Couldn't sleep. I took a lot of hallucinogens when I drank, just because I was exposed to it. So I hallucinated a lot, and I didn't really know what was real and what wasn't real. And that may not seem too. You may not be able to relate to that, but what I'm really trying to say is I couldn't. If I had a thought, I believed it. And my thoughts weren't too good. I had some pretty sick thoughts, so they were not real good to have. And if I believed everything I thought, you can see why I thought I was crazy. And it was very hard to live in that environment, so I really stayed up at night through most of my sobriety because it didn't clear up for me. It took me years of being sober, a lot of years, maybe close to 10 years before I found a guy that I was running around with. I've been running around for a couple of years. And he was a lot like me. He had the same kind of makeup. He had the same kind of insanity. I call it alcoholic insanity. And we could talk about it at the level that I couldn't do with that guy when I had 16 months when I was trying to do my fifth step. And when I was doing it with him, the funny thing was we were just relating to each other. Neither one of us had wrote it down or figured out what we did wrong or any of that kind of stuff. We were just talking about our insides. And over years of doing that with him, somehow or another I woke up really realizing that I was okay, that I didn't need to change any of that stuff. And the burden of it was slipping away. It didn't go away. It was slipping away. It was getting less. And I was able to be a little bit more at ease. Now, this is after 10 years of coming to meetings. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from staying here. But what I'm trying to say is all along it was getting better. But it was not like I got better. It was getting better. In other words, I was getting okay with me in little bits and pieces. And it was enough because, see, the truth was I still had nowhere else to go. I had had pretty good success in sobriety. I mean, I got to where I could run a business. I made a lot of money. I attracted a few girls. So I looked pretty normal in society. Problem is, it was still pretty empty for me. And this goes back, this emptiness that I'm talking about goes all the way back prior to me drinking. And see, I'd forgotten about this emptiness because the drinking took care of that. Except when I was coming off of it, the loneliness really came in pretty bad. I was pretty suicidal. I cut my wrist a couple of times, cut my chest. I'd do anything. I really wasn't trying to kill myself, though. I was just trying to change my mood. You know what I'm saying? To feel something. Feel something that wasn't feeling so bad. And it actually does work. To cut your... it changes your mood to cut your wrist. I didn't cut that deep, though. I knew what I was doing. I wasn't really trying to kill myself. I just wanted something to get better. But anyway, here I am sober quite a while now, and I really feel worse off than I did when I got here. Now, the truth is I'm not worse off, but I think I am. I was convinced I was. Remember, I told this guy, this buddy of mine, I said, I think I need to drink, man. I can't do this no more. AA doesn't work. I've done it all these years. I've 12-step people. I've gone to meetings until I'm sick of them. And I went to meetings every day. So I said, and I'm getting worse. I mean, life sucks. I'm powerless. I can't manage nothing. So I really didn't think there was much worth hanging on to. And his remark really was pretty amazing looking back on it. He agreed with me. He said, you know, if anybody should drink, it's you. And you know what? It's funny. I liked his answer because that's exactly what I wanted to hear. Someone understand that I wasn't full of shit, that I really was suffering. I really did want to drink. Not because I wanted to be drunk. Again, the whole point of drinking for me wasn't that I wanted to be drunk. I just needed a drink to change the way I felt. And I couldn't bear sobriety anymore. But the funny thing was, he related to me. He didn't put me in my place. He didn't tell me what I needed to be doing. He didn't even try to change my mind. But he did go on to say a few minutes later that, but if you don't drink, you'll be glad. So we kept running around together, and I never did drink during that period. And like he said, I am glad I didn't drink. I was pretty glad I didn't drink just a day later. Because this stuff does pass. I mean, whatever it is that I'm going through does pass. And when I was drinking, nothing ever passed. It was on you, and I had to live with it until I had another drink. And so I couldn't see a way out of not drinking. And I never really put the drinking as the problem. I never saw drinking as the reason I was in the condition I was in. I always saw drinking as the reason I could live. Without the drinking, I couldn't live. I mean, I needed to die if I didn't have the drink. So I knew I wanted to drink. And when I got to AA and they started talking about not wanting to drink, I never related to that I don't want to drink anymore. I related to people who talked more about the misery that they suffered, especially when they start talking about the misery they suffered when they weren't drinking. Because that's the real issue here for me. I mean, who cares about the misery when you're drunk? Just have another drink and you'll feel a little better. But when you're sober, it don't go that way. You're stuck in the misery. You know, it's not self-pity. See, I believed in a lot of this. I bought into a lot of this stuff about self-pity and selfishness and being the root of my problem. Until I realized I got good reason to be self-pity. I mean, I've got plenty of good reason. I'm sure y'all do too. So, and when I looked across the room, I knew they did because I really didn't want what they had. I really never did. There was a couple of people that I liked hanging out with because I felt better when I hung out with them. And the reason I felt better, and I didn't really know this then, but I know it now, is because they talked about the kind of stuff that I'm trying to talk about now. And I related to it. And I became almost like, hell, I felt better. I don't know why. It felt better to have someone who related to you, that understood that, you know, you're not full of pity, you're full of misery. You're full of pain. You're lonely. And there's nowhere else to go except to the bottle. And so I didn't go to the bottle because I had these people to hang out with. I got off of, you can call it like parole, but I spent about a year in reformatory school a couple of different times. And the last time I got out, they put you on this kind of aftercare parole kind of thing. If you screw up, you go right back and you serve up to you're 21 or whatever. But so I didn't want to go back, obviously. So I didn't I wanted to make sure. That's really why I came back. See, that's really why I decided to come to AA. It's because I knew I couldn't get away with drinking. Not because I wanted to quit drinking, but I knew I couldn't. Society was going to lock me up. And so I figured the only hope for me was to go to AA, because I knew what AA was about. They don't drink over there. And whether I wanted or not, maybe that's the only alternative I have. So that's what got me here. That's not what kept me here. That's not strong enough to keep me here. It was the people. It was a few people. So I started relating to these people, and that's how I got to staying here. So about 10 months, I got early release off of that aftercare thing. And I remember getting it, and I thought, well, I can drink now. That was the very first thought, that I no longer have to do this shit. But the difference was this. I knew I actually liked hanging out with these guys more than I wanted to go back to that alley. Because my last drink was with I didn't have any friends when I quit drinking. They were all gone. I didn't even want them at that point. I had basically disowned my friends. I didn't trust them. I had good reason not to trust some of them, because they would deliberately get me arrested if they could. I wasn't well liked, apparently, for your friends to be doing that to you. So I didn't really have anywhere else to go. Again, is why I didn't really want to leave this. But the truth was, I actually liked what I found here. And I have to admit, it wasn't the big book that I found. It was a few people. So I held on to the people. That's dangerous in AA. Because most people don't stay. Most people drink again. Oddly enough, the people that I ran with early in sobriety, the two main people, both drank again. Both of them one with 20 years and one with 8 years. But they both eventually drank again. And most of the people, majority of people over the years don't stay. So hanging on to specific people is pretty dangerous in AA. But that's all I was doing, is hanging on to people. Because something happened when I hung on to people. I felt better. I got to where I could function. I wasn't functioning better because I studied the program. It was because I was just hanging out with people, talking to them, relating to them. And in time, somehow or another, I began to look better, talk better, and be able to function. Now, if that's all we're trying to do here, I should leave and go on about my business. But the problem is, that ain't enough for a guy like me. Being able to get back to the ability of functioning, going to work, and looking like I'm okay, that ain't enough to stay here. I mean, that ain't enough for me to live. I can't live on that. I've tried, believe me. I wanted that to be enough, actually. I wanted to be able to move on. I didn't want to be here in AA. One of my other early thoughts was, I didn't want to grow old sitting in one of these chairs. And yet I'm here, and I don't feel like I've grown old here. I've actually gotten younger in my mind and the way I feel about things. But it really had nothing to do with me, is what I'm trying to get at. And it really, what eventually occurred was, I eventually did lose contact with these people that I had early connection with in AA. They either drank, they died, they moved. And so you're left if that's all you've got, you're left pretty empty at the end of the day. I mean, you ain't got nowhere to go. You're going to meetings now with people you don't like, and you don't relate to. The reason you don't like them is because you can't relate to them. That took a while to understand, too. The reason I don't like them isn't because I dislike you. It's because I can't relate to you. And the separation of not being able to relate Hell, that's all. My whole life's based on that. It took years of being sober to understand that's what my life is all about. It's not about doing the right thing. As bad as that may sound to you guys, my life today still is about people. And specifically, alcoholics. Because I'm an alcoholic. So I guess what I'm really getting down to, so I got to AA young and didn't think I had a problem with drinking. I thought I was insane. And all of a sudden now here I am standing up here realizing that I am an alcoholic who has a disease, and alcoholism. Now that took much longer for me to understand that this was a real disease. Even though they talked about it all the time I've been here, it's all in the book. They talk about it, they got a whole chapter on it being a disease, but it still doesn't make much sense that this is a disease. I mean, especially after you quit drinking. I mean, I don't have a drinking problem anymore, right? That's the phenomena that I've seen happen to a lot of my buddies in AA. Is that once the drink's gone and we're feeling better and we're functioning, we start doing other things like we stop cussing, we stop smoking, we start watching what we eat, we start doing all this stuff, we start going to church, we start doing all kinds of stuff. We become productive members of society. And we're no longer really afflicted with alcoholism. I've seen that so many times. And to find those people drink again. Some of them were, I mean, I've never been as good as these people that I've seen drink again. I never was able to really hold on to that. I never was very successful at becoming that great person, that really good person. So I never really was afforded the fact that I'm not an alcoholic anymore. Somehow or another, I was stuck in this thing that I'm never going to be nothing but an alcoholic. That's a blessing. Because if I ever get away from being an alcoholic and then I've just become another human being living in life on life's terms, I will no longer relate to the alcoholic. And that's the only way that I'll ever feel connected in life. Now that took, I'm saying a lot of things that took me decades to get to. Because I didn't get here quickly. And most of my sobriety, and I think this to be true with most people that I've known, suffer a tremendous amount silently in AA. They don't talk about it. Because it's too painful. I couldn't face none of my stuff. I just pushed it down, forgot about it. When I got dressed and got out of the house, I was no longer having to deal with it. I put on the face of the guy who ran the company or the guy that was in the meeting with 5 years of sobriety or the guy who was telling his story who knew how to do it. You know, I became somebody once I put on my face in the morning. But it's at night, see, when you're laying there alone or you're sitting in your room alone and you're having to live with you. And you know you really don't want to live with you because it's not that great. Sobriety's not that great. You're not that happy about it, as the book puts it. You know, I'm not so happy about the sobriety thing. And I tell you what, I believe that the book had it right. Most of us are not happy about this sobriety stuff. And that's why we drink. I don't believe there's any escaping the suffering. See, I think that's part of it. That's why we need each other, to relate about alcoholism. So for me, it really does come down to that today. And I didn't know that for decades here. I just couldn't really grasp that. Even though I was running around with people who understood that to a great deal. That buddy I ran around with knew it real well. I remember I called him one time. And I was thinking about drinking every day, and I didn't know why, because I actually didn't want to drink. But I was thinking about it every day. And I'd see a billboard or something, I'd actually feel like I was going to turn into the next liquor store. So I called him, And I said to him, I told him what was going on and how I couldn't get through a day. I couldn't get through an hour. I was just basically white knuckling the thoughts of wanting to drink. And I had about 12 years sober at this time. And I really didn't want it. So that's what's peculiar. Why in the hell am I going through this crap when I really don't even want to do it? And he said, "Well," I said, do you ever feel that way? He said, I already by now know that the point is I want to find somebody that understands. So I called him to ask him if he understood what I was doing, if he had ever felt this way. He didn't even pause much. He said, yeah, I feel that way every day. And I thought, holy shit, and he'd been sober 15 years. And I said, how in the hell do you deal with that, man? I can't deal. I've only been going through this for a couple of weeks. He says, well, it just reminds me of who I am and what I'm doing. And, you know, I didn't see the depth in that comment for a long time to understand that when I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking, I've got this insanity going on inside of me. Today I know that's a reminder of what I'm doing and who I am. And that's what he was telling me. I didn't pick up on it that day. It was years later before I realized the depth of what he was saying to me. He says, and then he went on to say, I know I'm going to a meeting today. He went on to say, I'm always on the way to a meeting. Sometimes it just takes a while to get there. I like that one because it isn't a ploy. I mean, generally today, I know I'm going to a meeting. But I can't always get to the meeting I want to get to. I mean, sometimes something does interfere. It's kind of like when you were drinking, really pissed you off when something interfered with it. You couldn't drink that day. Well, it's sort of the same way with AA today. You know, sometimes stuff actually does stop you from going to the meeting you want to go to. So it's not a ploy. It's genuine. I had another buddy in AA who said the bullshit won't fly. You know, it won't stick in AA. So whenever you take this stuff that you hear in meetings and you think it's bullshit, when it is bullshit to you, it won't stick. But when it becomes something real, and then really you believe in it, it sticks. It works. I like the way Bill Wilson put it. It's not a theory. You know, what we're doing here is not theory. It works. So I know it works for me. Not drinking and going to meetings is the basis of what I do today. And I go to a lot of meetings and people think that is so shallow. And, you know, it sounds shallow, actually. You know, all I'm doing is going to a meeting and not drinking today. It's a very shallow comment until you understand what it really means. It means you go to a meeting, you don't drink, it doesn't matter what else happens. You can get fired, your spouse could die, your kid could die. I mean, anything can happen. You could get a raise. But we're still going to meetings and we're not drinking. And the reason I'm doing that is because I'm trying to stay in touch with the disease of alcoholism and relate to another drunk on that level. Because if I don't, I will become that empty shell that I was when I got here. They used to talk about that a lot in AA years ago. They would say stuff like, you got to give away to keep it. Well, I didn't know what the hell that meant. What are you going to give away? I didn't even want anything they had. You know? It doesn't make a lot of sense if you just look around the room and say, well, I don't want anything these guys have got. Maybe their job, maybe their, you know, you might want their bank account, but they're not giving that away. They're giving away stuff you don't want. I mean, that's all I ever found. Not too much good stuff being given away here, so. But what it means to me today is, I have to give of myself to stay here. I'm not giving it to you. I'm just sharing it with another drunk so I can stay here. That's what it means. We got to give it away to keep it. We just keep doing this because it's the only way we can keep it. If we walk out of this meeting, we can't keep it. And I know that today. I don't have to I don't have to believe in it. I actually know it because I've actually, you know, gotten in places where I'd come to meetings and I really don't relate to nobody. And I'd get out of the meeting and wonder why in the hell am I still going to these meetings. Come in the meeting, turn right around, walk out because I can't stand to listen to any more of the crap that's going on in the meetings. And it's not them. Because the same crap's being talked about for 35 years that I've been here. Same arguments, same disagreements, same dilemmas. But the difference is when I'm relating versus when I'm in here talking about me. And so what am I relating about? It's not about jobs. It's not about money. It's not about girlfriends or wives or kids. What I'm really trying to relate on is alcoholism. But you can't really do that until you believe it. You can't relate about alcoholism until you actually believe it exists. If you really think it's about drinking and living right, you probably can't relate to someone sharing about alcoholism until you hear it. You're not going to want to listen to it because it sounds scary, but the truth is if you can ever get exposed to someone opening up to you, I find that most people actually relax that are an alcoholic because they know the other guy's no threat. There's no threat anymore. There's no competition. The other guy's no better than you. Doesn't matter whether he's got 10 years or 2 days. It wouldn't matter because you're relating on a level where the amount of sobriety has nothing to do with what you're relating on. It's the way, what I've come to believe in is that my disease, once I quit drinking, the physical part of our alcoholism is arrested. But the rest of the disease is not arrested. And that's the part of staying sober. It's still very well alive. I have alcoholism sober. When I'm drinking, it really doesn't matter. What's going on inside me, I numb myself to it. But when I'm sober, I can't numb it. I can distract myself. And I did that many years sober. I distracted my drinking from, my job, girls, money, trips, a new car. Those things can be a very good distraction and mood-changing, mood-altering things to make me feel better about where I'm going, what I'm doing. But in the end, you end up the same lonely, isolated, drunk that you were the day you walked in here. And if you really don't believe that, keep coming around. You'll see it happen to those around you. I've seen it happen to many. But long-term sobriety. So it doesn't matter how long you've been sober. It can happen any time. That's why it's a disease. And I've come to believe in it because it really has affected me over the years. And the only way I've gotten relief from it is truly by relating to another drunk. And the only reason I'm relating to another drunk, and this really took a long time to come to grips with, I never really wanted to be a drunk. I thought that's what I wanted to be. When I first got here, I thought I liked drinking. I thought that's the life I was choosing for myself. I thought I actually, matter of fact, I didn't have a lot of ambition, so I never wanted the house and the wife and the kids or a job. I didn't want any of that stuff. All I wanted to do was drink, and I thought that was because I wanted it. I thought it was because that was my choice, and I had a right to choose that way. But the longer I've been sober, the more I realized the reason was because drinking did something for me. So I was willing to forfeit everything. I didn't have a choice but to forfeit everything because drinking did something for me. It made me what I wanted to be. It made me perfectly okay when I drank. Nothing ever in life did that for me. Not even AA. I know this is not the way it works for some people's story, but my story, when I finally got to the place where I actually related to those two girls, that was kind of what happened to me. I felt as good as I could probably ever feel. I felt free. I felt accepted. I felt okay. I didn't feel like I had to compete with them. They didn't ask nothing of me. AA is a great place because of that. To me, that's what an AA meeting is all about. It's coming here and just not putting any strings on anybody. I'm not here to put anything on nobody. I don't expect nothing from nobody. Because that's what AA gave me. They expect nothing of me. And trust me, they didn't get much. Now, I haven't given AA a whole lot, but it's given me a whole lot to hang on to. So anyway, I appreciate y'all listening. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thank you for the rigorous honesty. Absolutely. Seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your generous donations go to support this group and AA its own. And I've asked Larry to give out the chips.
I'd like to share with everybody something I heard at AA Eagle Rock and Atlanta Men's Workshop. It was very interesting thing I did. Totally. They said, on average, Americans drink 22 gallons of liquor a year. And on average, Americans walk 900 miles every year. That means, on average, Americans get 41 miles a day. First of all, I'd like to offer anybody who's coming back for the first time or who is in for the first time this white chip. This is an international sign of surrender. Come and get this. This is a way to play. All right. Very good.
Coming back. There you go.
This is the international sign of the handcuffs, silver. 30 days of sobriety means you don't have to wear the silver. And you want that. We have red for 90 days. Let's just one. Oh, have to get a treat. 6 months. And we have 9 months. Years of multiple thereof. First come, first serve, and second come, first serve. Oh, can you grab a blue chip? Keep recovering alcohol.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm still by the grace of God and the confidence that I keep. And this is 21 years.
Wow.
Probation and get my BMW back. So far, I've been able to get off probation. I am truly thankful to God and to the folks who've tolerated me over the years and to the ancient person that God has put in my path, the sponsors I've had over the years, and the sort of network that I've had here. I did not have a life prior to that. Blackout drinker. I mixed and matched. I did whatever I could to not feel and to escape. I remember once I was in a blackout and where these folks I was hanging with you swallowing down Southern Company in the morning. And me and one of the folks that were with pulled out the bag of pills and he started popping these pills. I'm like, give me some too, and I took some. And when I came to,
I came to in the middle of a Jay Giles Band concert. Didn't know who the hell Jay Giles Band I was more just probably the Mark Stellis and James Brown. Very traumatizing experience. Actually, it justified why I needed to stay high for about a month. I'm trying to get that out of my system. So it was bad. I came here, just speaking out on the street. And I've been in the street up until this moment. I can bear witness and say that I have not had a bad day. At least the last 18 weeks, I've had some crying hours, and that's what, if I had to sum up the steps of alcoholism, the steps have given me the ability to not have bad days. And I much rather have crying hours than have bad days. And I've had crying hours. I've had a lot to happen in my life, with being deaths and all kinds of stuff. But having trying hours and not having to sabotage the whole day, I like that. I like the results I've got here. I like that the obsession to drink has been lifted and I'm not aroused with that anymore. And I know what to do to take care of myself. Some days I don't want to do it, but I can do it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Congratulations.
There you go.
Congratulations.
I got $5. I'm hoping for $6. All right. We'll leave this one up here in case you want to get it on drums. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Good job. Okay. It's time for AA-related announcements. Anybody like to share? Okay, Saturday, April 17th, 9:30 p.m. in this room is the Spring Fling Dance. Going to have a DJ. The dances here are, they're fun. Simple as that. And come on. There's a 12 and 12 meeting that's at 8 o'clock here on Saturday night. Fabulous meeting. Blow off a little steam afterwards. Come join us. And every Thursday night there's dinner here downstairs. Really a super job. And there's great meetings all through Thursday night. If you're a newcomer here tomorrow night, there's newcomer meeting at 8 o'clock. Definitely should be part of any newcomer's agenda. And even for those that aren't, it's a great meeting. And on Saturday morning, there's a breakfast here. It's the best breakfast in town. $5, you can't beat it, hands down. Next week, we have an adjustment in our speaker. We're going to have a fellow as an alternate who was scheduled for May, but our scheduled speaker, his father had a stroke, and I think he's going to be not available. But we're going to have Raphael D. If you know Gene Russell, he's very close with Gene Russell, and he's been sober since April 13th, 2007. But he's got he's been able to stay sober despite some pretty significant medical health issues. So he's going to get his strength up and come and share with us. And then following that, half of the English couple, Debbie, she's going to come in and she's going to talk for an hour and then she's going to say bye, 11/27/2000. She's a member of the NAVA 7:30 early morning study group. She's a real, really nice lady, so please come and join us. And I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity... Oh, what? Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the reminder. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer. Let's have a moment of silent meditation. Who kept us sober tonight?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back for us to be
Will you walk away from who I am? Right. Come and get it. Which was written. Which was written. Yeah. So.
Eddie waited till he finished high school. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with the tattoo too. The future was wide open. They moved into a place they both could afford. He found a nightclub he could work at the door. She had a guitar and she taught him some chords. The sky was the limit. Into the great wide open, under the skies of blue, out in the great wide open, a rebel without a crew. Said it always played from the heart. He got an agent and a roadie named Bart. They made a record and it went in the charts. The sky was the limit. His leather jacket had chains that would jingle. They both met movie stars, partied and mingled. Their A&R man said, I don't hear a single. The future was wide open. Into the great wide open. Under the skies of blue, out in the great wide open, a rebel without a crew. Into the great wide open, under the skies of blue, into the great wide open, a rebel without a crew.
Thank you. Back about 1800 and some, a Louisiana couple had a red headed son. No, they suited him till Jack the Joe. They just called him Billy Bio. Billy, Billy Bio, watch where you go. You're walking on quicksand, walk slow. Billy, Billy Bio, watch what you say. A pretty girl gets you one of these days. Billy was a boy, kind of big for his size. Red hair, freckles, and big blue eyes. 13 years from the day he was born, Bill fought the battle of the little big horn. Billy, Billy Bio, watch where you go. Walking on quicksand, walk slow. Billy, Billy Bio, watch what you say. A pretty girl gets you one of these days. One day, Billy cried, ho, ho. I can whip the feathers off a Geronimo. He smarted off, the chief got mad. This nearly ended our Louisiana land. Billy, Billy Bio, watch where you go. You're walking on quicksand, walk slow. Billy, Billy Bio, watch what you see. A pretty girl will get you one of these days. One day in 1878, a pretty girl walked through Bill's front gate. He didn't know whether to stand there or run. He wound up married because he didn't either one. Billy, Billy Bio, watch where you go. You're walking on quicksand, walk slow. Billy, Billy Bio, watch what you say. A pretty girl gets you one of these days. A pretty girl gets you one of these days.